Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 19th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Are there any other PokerCasts anymore? I don't even know. I'm assuming there's dozens.
I would say there's probably thousands now.
Thousands, okay, thousands. So I've got a lot of, you know, balls saying that we're the best one, and I don't even know if there's other ones out there, right?
Oh, we've always been in the top three at the beginning, because there were only three.
That's so right.
We always got that going for us.
We did win the now-defunct Bluff Award for Best Podcast once.
That's right.
Yeah, so that was interesting.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
We sound like there's a, we're like those guys that wear our Letterman's jacket back to the 20-year college.
That's hilarious.
I've scored four touchdowns in one game at Polk Hope.
Oh, Bundy.
All right, we have a new world champion and are down to the final week of action at the World Series of Poker. And before I say this week's updates, I completely screwed up last week, which I'm sure you realize now, Chris, and all of our listeners have screwed up. So I give all my updates off of the WSOP.com updates page, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense now that they only put events up there that there are actually updates for. So last week when I thought that we were, I go surprised, I'm like, oh my God, we're done already. Nope, there's still plenty of events left.
Yeah.
They just went to the update page, so so we still have 5 days left, folks. So sorry about the false alarm last week.
Well, I was going to save this till the end, but to me, it's just bizarre to have events after the main event. It's like if this were a four-act play or a movie, it'd be the denouement, you know? I just don't get the point of it.
Nice swimming there.
Great, thank you. I don't understand how these events even happen. I don't know. It's like
such a
letdown.
I know what you're saying, but it's interesting. A lot of these final events are high roller events. So wondering if the thought is, hey, we just put $50 million in a couple people's hands.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll dump it back into the prize pool. I don't know. But I didn't really realize how top heavy the main event prize pool was until putting together the show notes for this. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But
it's just like, hey, the Packers won the Super Bowl. Yay. Now we're going to have four more games that mean nothing. You know, that's why the Pro Bowl was always crap, because it's like the denouement of football. Who wants to watch that?
Loving your journey today.
Thank you. All right, go ahead.
All right, Corey Aldemir of Germany has won the main event, pocketing $8 million, pushing his career total to $20 million earned in tournaments. He defeated runner-up George Holmes, whose only previous recorded cash was for $50,855 in the 2019 main event. Aldemir is now third in the Player of the Year race with 12 events remaining. Dragana Lim was the last woman standing in this year's main event, bowing out in 64th place for $95,700, which she will use to start a new animal foundation.
Nice.
And former Andy Cruz passenger for Team NNG was the second to last woman standing, finishing 90th, and that was fun to watch her through this whole process. Scott Ball won event 68, the $1,111 little one with a one drop for his second bracelet of the series. He is now in the lead for the No Limit Player of the Year. Brian Hastings won event 73 at the $10,000 Stud 8 Championship for his fifth career bracelet. Just announced yesterday, Elliot Lezra is this year's lone inductee into the Poker Hall of Fame. And yes, after many, many years of rumors, it is now official. Next year, the World Series will move from the Rio to the Convention Center in between Bally's Las Vegas and Paris Las Vegas on the Las Vegas Strip. Movie star and high-stakes player Vince Vaughn will serve as Master of Ceremonies next year.
I hate to be that guy, but
you love to be that guy.
I love to be that guy. I'm totally lying. I love to be that guy, but I seem to This should be a time of positives and happiness, and I'm always finding fault with things in this World Series. I don't know what it is. Like, for instance, you know, Elie Eleiðra being the lone inductee in the Poker Hall of Fame. We've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, and I really don't want to stretch it too far, but, you know, I remember seeing an interview with one of the living Hall of Fame members, and they were talking about how the players who are winning tournaments, you know, it's not real poker, and it doesn't make sense to have the media vote on them, because they have no idea if these are quality poker players. And but it just seems like it's just going to be the good old boys, you know, club, and Elie Eleiðra certainly deserves it. We are not doubting that at all. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. But it's like, if they didn't play with the people, or if they didn't know them, these guys aren't getting in. You know, and then so then they're just going to have to rely on statistics like anybody else would, who could be a perfectly objective third party voter who, you know what I mean? It's just, I have a problem with the Hall of Fame, and I just always will probably. And then narrowing it down to one inductee was the crap we've talked about before. But I don't want to be negative. I'm not being negative. I just don't understand it. And then, like, why is there a no limit player of the year? Either you're the best player for a series or you're not. I'm not trying to be that guy. And then, of course, I've heard all of the bitching about Bally's in Paris as a convention center, and you know what it's going to be. It's going to open up a whole can of worms for problems for getting there on time and getting dinner. And I mean, I don't know. A lot of negativity here. I'm not trying to be negative. Let's just be positive that Thanksgiving's around the corner. We're going to have a big fat meal and fall asleep.
You know what I kind of feel like after listening to that rant? I feel like the rental car lady in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and you're Steve Martin.
I thought you were going to go Seinfeld there, you know. Anybody can take a reservation. It's holding the reservation that's key. Yeah. But yeah, Planes, Trains,
and Automobiles. Oh, man. I always look forward to a good Chris Cassenza rant. So I don't disagree with you on most of this. I mean, again, the World Series of Poker is a money-making, marketing event. So I can see why they have 18 different players of the year, because that's 18 more press releases they can put out instead of one, right?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it rewards people that are good at one style game and not another. Again, it probably dilutes the whole thing. So, I understand that. I'm not going to pile on, I agree with you completely on the Hall of Fame. It's just the way it is. We can start our own poker Hall of Fame if we're not happy with it, right?
We're going to.
Regardless of the problems that may or may not happen next year, and I generally think that people overreact to that kind of stuff and assume that there's going to be a problem that that may or may not actually exist. Obviously, they're going to run this event. It's in their best interest to make it as easy to participate as possible, because that's how they make money, right? Mm. So I would think that they've already started thinking about how to make this work as well as they can in the new home. But you're never going to recreate the Rio from the ease of parking standpoint or the ease of getting around. I mean, it was just a beautiful place to have it, right? You had acres and acres of parking. Even if you had to park a half a mile in the back of the parking lot and sweat your balls off to walk in there, you still could find a place to park, right? And then you didn't have to go to you didn't have to see any other part of the Rio to play, the World Series. So, it was a perfect place for players. I mean, now, obviously, the flip side is that, you know, if you're staying on the Strip, now it's easy. You don't have to use a car to get there. There's going to be pluses and minuses to it. But I'm going to give Caesars the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing here. And let's be clear, too, they're probably going to sell the Rio. That's the whole reason they've
been waiting. Oh, yeah.
Now, right? So it's not like there's an option to go back there that they decided to. They just say, hey, this is going to be better. I think they're making the best of what they know operationally is kind of what is going to happen. So,
and correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am wrong, but didn't they already sell it or something, and they had a 2-year extension or something?
Yeah,
right?
I think you're right. Yeah,
that's why they had to get out.
Operating agreement, yeah. Yeah. So it is what it is, folks. So on the positive side, on that note, I'm a big Vince Vaughn fan. I think he's awesome. I like the fact that they brought in a movie star who also knows poker to be the master of ceremonies, and he's a funny, freaking funny dude. I wonder if he's gonna bring Speaker City stuff.
I was gonna say that. Is he gonna have like Snoop Dogg with him when he's everybody give it up for Snoop Dogg, you know?
That would be fantastic. And it's Vegas, so he's gonna be crashing all kinds of weddings. That's gonna be exciting. One of the things that's interesting, because I've been reading a lot more Vegas articles now with my little side gig, and one of the things I always like about Vegas is they're always trying to like P.T. Barnum each other, right? It's always a big show there.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think that's really cool. If there's one city in the world that this nonstop is just trying to show each other up and just be as big as possible. So I know there's going to be some poker purists that are like, Vince Vaughn. I'm like, yeah. Or why do we need a master of ceremonies? But I think it's cool. I think it's showmanship at its best.
Yeah. So. I don't have a problem with it. He's a poker player, too, at least. You know, it's not like he's just some random movie star. I mean, he actually plays poker, so.
Yeah, and he's so money, too. You know. So.
What I love most about our show is that we've now talked for 10 minutes and really haven't even really touched on the main event, because who cares? Right? We're a show about poker, and we're like, oh, yeah, that Corey guy won, but, you know. Let's talk about the stuff that matters, like bitching about other stuff. You know what else, too? I was very impressed with your pronunciation of Fatima, too, because... You know, a lot of people would see it, think it's Fatima, you know, but I have a friend named Fatima, and she's Portuguese, and that's, Fatima, so yeah, and that's how they pronounce it, and it's terrific. And she wasn't a passenger on one of our Los Angeles cruises?
No, she's a Bermuda cruise.
Bermuda, oh, okay, all right, very cool.
And I remember that because she was dancing with my wife in the little, they have these little, if you guys haven't been to Bermuda, they have these little bird cages on street corners, which we thought was hilarious, so we have photos of my wife and Fatima dancing in there, but that's what the cops are and the traffic cops use.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, it was fun to watch her run. You know, I'm sure she would like to have been the last woman standing, but she I think her previous best was 600 or something, I think. So I mean, that's impressive enough. I haven't even played it yet.
Right.
So to top it with 90th, and she gets such a great rail from all the folks that she knows from all the cruises that she's been on. She's been on Card Player cruises a lot more than ours. So that was fantastic. So I kept up with updates, and then, you know, I checked every day. And then I saw that she bowed down. I felt bad. But then, 68,000.
Wow.
Now, that's still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's almost seven times your buy-in. But 90th place out of 6,300 players.
Yeah.
That's when I'm like, wow. And then from an 8 million on top.
Yeah.
For, you know, the 89th player after you. I don't know. I think maybe it just seems really top heavy. I didn't see the math. I don't know what the math is. It may actually make perfect sense. So I'm not criticizing it. It was just kind of surprising. I don't spend a lot of time. I don't think a lot of people spend a lot of time looking at the payouts for anything after the final table, right? So I've never seen what 90th made before too, but I'm like, man, 68,000, geez, that's a lot of work. That's day seven she bowed out, and I think so. I mean, that's 7 days.
I would hate to make $70,000 for a week's worth of work. I'd hate that. That's not enough for me. I haven't made $70,000 in like 10 years.
This is what happens when I take the negative route in our relationship and you come scooping in with the positive side.
I double down, buddy. I double down. It's what I do.
Good cop when I bad cop.
But, you know, again, it gets back to your whole P.T. Barnum and headlines and stuff. I mean, they want that big number on top to say $8 million. Yep. We paid $8 million, even though they didn't pay any of it. But, you know, that's the key to it right there. But.
I didn't watch any of this. I watched a little bit of the Poker Go early on, and I had no problems with it. Nothing exciting enough for me to bring it on the show and talk about it. But it definitely sounded like there was a big rooting interest in George Holmes last night. This is kind of another Chris Moneymaker kind of everyman kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, he's a decent player. I mean, in this realm, I mean, you can't compare it to 12 million versus 50,001, but that's a nice payday.
Absolutely.
And apparently, you know, he was running bluffs left and right that were just leaving people's jaws on the ground. So he held his own against an extremely accomplished player and other accomplished players at the final table as well, too. So certainly think he has a career ahead of him. So,
do we think this – I didn't look into the stats of Corey during the series, but did he like get propelled to third on like all of this, or did he have other caches and stuff that, because I mean, that's to win the main event and get the third place already, and then you could literally win player of the year by just playing the main event and then the denouement of events at the end of the thing, right?
Three times.
You know, you thought I was done, but I went back, got one in one last time. But really, I mean, did he have other caches? Do you know?
I think if I remember correctly, on last week's show, we said it was 1,600 to win the main event. So, and he has 2,900.
Okay. All right. So then he must have. Okay.
So he had some other caches as well, too. But, I mean, again, we talked about the Player of the Year rant that Helmuth went on. And I guess one of the things that I forgot to mention in that discussion was that everybody has been trying to do Player of the Years everywhere. I mean, not just in poker and everything, right? And where it gets really difficult is when you have these outsized events with smaller events, right?
Because any of these mathematical formulas, they're always going to juice up that big event. So these leaderboards work much better when you have, I mean, in theory, if you had the same size of event and the same players throughout the whole thing, that would be a perfect scenario, right? But that isn't how it works. So there's always going to be a problem one way or the other. The big fields are going to skew each other. I mean, if you take out buy-in, I mean, then it probably equalizes a little bit because there were some larger fields in this series. They just didn't have $10,000 buy-ins. But if you take that out, I mean, theoretically, you're assuming that aside from the main event, which lots of people play, but these other 10K events are populated by pros mostly, right? They can afford it. So, and then theoretically, it's more difficult to make a final table in that one than not. So the formulas are never going to be perfect, and you can keep tweaking it all you want. I think the people that do a good job, and I know our friend Dan Ross at Hold'em Radio has done a really good job with the leaderboard we use for the World Championship, and I think he uses for other things too. But he does, he runs a lot of scenarios afterwards just to see, hey, if you tweak this, who would have won? Or if you get it better. So, you know, as long as you're constantly tweaking it, I have no problem with it, but it's always going to be imperfect.
Do you get the idea that the people who come up with these systems are the same people who came up with the weighted GPA when you were in high school?
Because
when I was in high school, the perfect GPA was 4.0. How could it not be, right? An A is worth 4. And all of a sudden, this guy's got... I got a
failure.
Yeah, yeah. This guy's like, oh, I got a 5.3. I'm like, what? How's that possible? There's only an A, you know? But no, they give them extra points for these harder classes, so it's like that's what they're doing with these. Oh, if it's a main event, they had to pay 10 grand to get in, it's weighted. Or if it's a world championship or the 50K, you know, players championship, whatever. Okay, it's weighted more. And that's not fair. It's not fair. You know? It's not right.
It's not like Channing Tatum in shoot, I've lost that movie. I love that movie.
You know, it's like, I guess it's true. Like, I certainly would think that my A in applied physics is a lot tougher to get than basket weaving 101.
Yes.
You know, so I guess it makes sense, but they should just have an overall system, you know, that explains everything and not, you know, make the A, I don't know. I'm it's too much negativity on the show. Let's be positive now.
All right. The Women's Poker Association has launched a new program to support women who play poker. It's called the Purple Tie Guy Program. Keying off the organization's color of purple and the fact that its gatherings and events are called purple parties, men are encouraged to wear a purple tie guy pin or patch at events to show they're committed to making the game of poker more inviting for women.
We got
to
get Oprah Winfrey involved.
Oh, yes.
Right? Color purple. She's phenomenal.
Fantastic. And this should make, she put like main event buy-ins under her seat. You get a main event buy-in.
Yes.
You get a main event buy-in.
Yes. You know, Oprah's favorite things are purple ties, you know. But it's kind of, I don't want to be that guy again because I just said let's be positive. But it's interesting because they knew that no one would wear a purple tie when they played poker. So they call it the purple tie guy, and they give him pins or patches to wear about a tie. If you're going to wear something, you'd wear the purple tie.
Well, I mean, they can wear a purple tie if they want. I mean,
right,
they wear ties to play poker, though.
You know they're not going to.
I think the tie is probably because that's a male thing. There's no, I mean, again, it's 2021.
Yeah, that's not right either. Yeah.
But 50 still. I mean, majority of folks walking around wearing ties.
Did you not watch Survivor last night? I mean,
I have not. Yes, it'll spoil it.
All right. Well, there's somebody on the show who's not a man who wears a tie. And it's like, hey, so it's not a man thing. It's a tie. So I don't know. But I'm very, very happy about this, though. I think it's great. I think that the key has always been the behavior of men to making it a much more palpable environment for women to play and comfortable. And so this is a great way to do it. You know, I just thought it was, I was just trying to be funny that it's weird that you can wear a tie if they give them a pin with a tie on it. It's just, but it makes sense. It's less obtrusive, but it's something that's subtle. It's like everybody wears the pins, you know, what's the pin this year at the Oscars going to be, you know, or whatever, but I like it.
And really the same with patches and poker as well, too.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's really cool.
What I like about it, because this has always been a difficult thing. We've talked about this on the show a lot, you know, how you actually make this real change. There's a lot of these summits and stuff where they come up with a list of ideas, but how do you actually affect real change? And I'm not saying this is the solution to it, but what I like about it is it's symbolic, but in a way that encourages conversations, right? So if you're sitting down at the table and there's a guy with a purple tie pin or patch, that's going to start a conversation at some point, or hopefully, or you may at least, right? An invited conversation.
Right.
And that's where it really happens. And now you're starting to spread the word and you get people to understand a little bit more that may not have thought about it in the past. And, you know, again, we go back to the survey that they did. And if I remember correctly, I think the number one thing that keeps women from playing is intimidation at the table, right? So,
yeah.
So I could see, I mean, you don't always, I mean, certainly in a tournament, you don't get to pick your tables, but in the cash games, you have some degree of control over where you play. So, you know, a good player does a lap around the room before they put themselves on the wait list to kind of check out games, right? So, and if you find a table with five guys wearing purple tie guy pins, that might be a good game to get in, right?
Indeed.
So,
cool.
So,
yeah, I really like it. I'm happy.
Yeah. All right. This week's update on poker room reopenings. In Massachusetts, Encore Boston Harbor hopes to reopen its poker room by February 1st. And I'll pause for lots of cheers for our Massachusetts folks.
Yeah, right.
Bugging me. When do you know about Encore? I'm like, I don't know. But then finally, it's not official, but it's going to be, their target date is February 1st.
So
once that reopens, that gets up to 285 reopened poker rooms, and not too many big ones are left. So we're big corner, I think. So, and then remember, we'll send out that email when I remember ntfmagazine.com/reopen when I don't remember. And email us, change us at editor@ntfmagazine.com. And one more plea and thank you for those folks. And we got three or four on this week, so definitely appreciate the help.
Awesome. Annie updates, Papes, the Annie Up fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site. It's available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post in that aforementioned Annie Up fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move this week. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $2, $5 No Limit Omaha home game. I prefer the no limit aspect because the bets tend to be more like No Limit Hold'em than Pot Limit Omaha. Basically, there isn't a perceived mandatory pot-sized bet every round. The buy-in is 500 and the game is 8-handed. The blinds post and we're under the gun with pretty close to our starting stack. We look down at the ace of spades, ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds, 10 of clubs. Nothing much to say here. Let's raise it up. We make it $15 to go. The plus one folds, the MP calls, the cutoff calls. This player is fairly new to Omaha, but is a very strong no-limit hold'em player. He's catching on pretty quickly. He bought in for 500 and currently has close to 700. The button calls, the small blind folds, and the big blind calls. There's already $75 in the pot, and the flop is the 10 of spades, 8 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds. This is a pretty good flop for our hand. We have an overpair as well as a flush draw and a backdoor straight draw. When the big blind checks, we make a $50 bet into the pot. The MP folds, the cutoff calls, but the rest of the table folds. There's now 175 in the pot, and the turn is the queen of spades. That gives us even more outs. We make a $100 bet. The cutoff pauses, checks his cards, and seems to genuinely think for a time before calling. There's now 375 in the pot, and the river is the jack of spades. We missed. We do have the ace of spades blocker and have improved to two pair, but we have less than a pot-sized bet in our stack. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands for situations. The podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership. Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And Chris, I think it's been too long since our friend Big G was back on the show.
I know.
Moved him up into the queue so we could talk about him this week.
Very good.
All right, here's his setup this week. So I usually don't play on Sundays, but after returning the felt after COVID and booking wins of $297 and $408 within the week, I decided to play a relaxed session and be satisfied with a small win. I arrived just after 12:30 p.m. to find three tables running, all 1-2 no limit hold'em. You know, fifth on the wait list. Before I can wash my hands, we have two more players arrive and they open a new table. I cash out after this hand. I don't even go that far. But yeah, so here we go. So that was the setup. Let's see. So it's seven-handed now. And he says, under the gun, opens the action with a raise to $10. He says, standard opening raises have been all over the place, with some players sticking to 7, others 10, and me on the higher side with 15 to 17. Another gun player begins the hand with squiggly 350, and I have the table covered. Middle position player calls with his $450 stack, and it's on me in the hijack with ace of diamonds, king of clubs.
Well, Vic likes to re-raise, but I don't know what this under-the-gun player plays like. It's kind of early. It's a brand new table, so it's tough to, you know, I guess you revert back to, hey, when you see this hand, you know, it's good enough to pop it again. So now, if you go all the way back to something like Theory of Poker by Sklansky, he would tell you that if this guy's playing that way, under the gun players would raise with the same hand that we have or better.
Right.
So right now we're at best tied with this guy if he were playing ABC Theory of Poker, you know, way of playing. So I want to be in position. And since we're in the hijack, we're not even the cutoff or the button, I'm going to want to probably raise again, try to at least know that we're going to be the last person to act on this hand. And we'll kind of get an idea if this guy is a loose under the gun player or if he's just, you know, if he re-raises us again, then we got an idea of what this guy's going to be playing moving forward when he's under the gun. So with a caller, you know, I might make it 50 to go. Plus, like I said, or like Vic had said, he tends to raise on the higher end. So he might actually re-raise on the higher end as well. So 50 sounds about right.
Yeah, certainly. Generally, I always assume that Vig is the best player in any of these games. So if you're the best player, you should be raising and putting pressure on folks. But for a lesser player like me, my concern is your concern. We have an under the gun player that raised. There's been no information given to us on him, right? So. If we raise and then he re-raises us, where does that leave us now, right? It's unlikely that that means queens, which means it's aces, kings, or ace king, as you mentioned. And that's a tough way to play the rest of the hand, I think.
Yeah.
Because if we hit one of them, you know, is it the right one? in that scenario, you would hope it would be the king, the ace. But you don't know for sure, right? So. So I guess there's a case to raise here. CB re-raises at that point, then I'm feeling not so good about this hand. So the other way to take is to kind of be sneaky and just call here and disguise the strength. What looks like the strength of your hand, it could be the weakness of your hand.
and see how it plays out. I mean, again, we keep talking about Ace King. We've always joked about it being the drawing hand, but it is a Broadway hand, right? So if you're at aces, if you're up against aces or kings, you know, flopping or turning or rivering a straight is a good way of beating that hand. So I guess it just depends on your level of confidence here. The probably the proper play is to race. So and you said what, 50?
Which is probably right. Yeah. You know, the other thing too I'm thinking is you know, if we just called, we might see the cutoff and button come along for a cheap price, and then they're gonna be playing any cards that we can't really narrow down, and then we're gonna be acting before them. And so the raise really feels right here, but unless we knew they were gonna fold, like if we in the brief time we sat with them, they seem pretty passive or, you know, whatever, then I might just call. But for the most part, I'm probably popping it here.
Well, and I think the good thing, one more check mark in the call department is what you're saying. So if we get a lot of other callers after us, because we're in the hijack, so now we shift our strategy, right?
Yeah.
Now we're not looking for an ace or a king. We're looking for that Broadway. So, and if that flop comes with nothing, then it's easy to get out of it at that point. And let them go to war. But if we, you know, hit a jack and a queen there, then or 10, now I'm feeling a little bit better about it. So,
yeah.
All right. Let's see. He says, here's my perception of the rest of the table. The cutoff is very loose and sits with squiggly 200. The players in the button and in the small blind, the better players at the table, but have been playing very tight. They each sit with around the max buy-in of $400. The big blind is a former dealer and sits on a short stack, squiggly 90 after doubling through the under the gun player on the previous hand. So, big slick in the hijack. What's the move? He says, I've been the player opening pots and three betting most of the sessions, so we decided to try to disguise the strength of our hand this time with a call. Next three players fold and the big blind calls, so we're positioned with four to a flop. So, all right, well, I like that the fact that he's mixing it up. And I did mention disguising the strength of their hand. The only concern is we, if it's not as strong as somebody else's hand, right?
So, yeah.
But we'll get some clarity here, I think, on this flop.
So. Well, the other thing too that's interesting is that we didn't know before I gave all that analysis with you that the under the gun just doubled someone up. You know, so this under the gun raise now, right?
It was a big one doubled through.
Oh, yeah,
still don't have any more information on the under the gun.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was the under the gun player. I was going to say, because then it's like, well, he could be playing any cards now because he's on tilt, you know, but if it's not him, then never mind. Okay.
All right. Pot is $35 after the rake, and the flop is the ace of hearts, 10 of clubs, 4 of hearts. Big blind checks, and the under the gun player bets the same $10. Middle position player folds, and it's on us.
Wow. Okay, so if the guy hit a set of aces, he probably wouldn't bet, but maybe he would. $10 seems kind of
weird. If he would, $10, that's a good bet.
Yeah, it's a good, for $10, like, you know, less than a third of the pot. I don't know, I think I want my answers. There's Broadway there, there's flush there, and I want to know what this guy's playing. Like, I think I'm popping it. I think the guy should have bet 35. Or not 35. He should have bet like 20, 25.
Yeah.
And when he didn't, I think we should correct that mistake now and make it like 40 and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, so we picked up one of our Broadway cards, a 10, but the ace is not, first going for the straight is not the card we want. And obviously, it makes our hand better. So at this point, I think we got to get some clarity as where we are here. We can't just keep calling and disguising. We got to make some things up. We got to figure out what the big blind has here. And more importantly, obviously, the under the gun.
Yeah.
All right. Our hero says, this $10 c-bet seems weak on a draw-heavy flop. We decide on a raise to $45 to protect against the flush and Broadway draws. If we get raised by the small stack, I guess we're going to go to the mattresses. But if we get raised by the under the gun player, we'll have a difficult decision. Big blind gets out of the way, and the villain just calls, so we're heads up to the turn.
Okay.
Okay. I kind of feel better about this. I mean, obviously, a set of aces might just call here and let us hang ourselves. But I don't know. I'm feeling better about this. So
yeah, I mean, if you had a set of aces, you probably would have bet more on that flop. And if you didn't bet more on that flop, now that you've got somebody on the hook for more money, the pot's growing, wouldn't you want to now protect that hand and bet, raise again? And if you're, I mean, I guess it would be, you know, hey, I'm playing with my cards face up. But still, I also don't want somebody to hit their flush because they decided to try to get the free card on the river, you know, by raising now. So I still want them to pay for that. I feel like if this guy didn't bet again, we're ahead, but I don't know. Maybe not.
All right, with $125 in the pot, the dealer turns the Jack of Hearts, or board now is Ace of Hearts, Ten of Clubs, Four of Hearts, Jack of Hearts. And with little hesitation, our opponent slides out a stack of 20 red chips. It's on us for $100 to call.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, I don't think the guy had King Queen, but the heart got there. And now, I mean, we picked up a Broadway, you know, draw, but the hearts are already there, so the straight could be meaningless. I'm just going to call. I know Vic will. Well, Vic, it's either call or shove, I would think, anyway, because you can only have, you know, you just bought in for the max of 400 and he's got table covered. He can only, you know, unless he's got 800 in front of him, which I doubt. You know, I mean, it's probably a shove or call or fold move here. So I'm probably just going to call, try to keep the pot respectable.
Yeah, well, the other gun player started with squiggly 350, and we haven't covered, so, yeah.
No, 250. Oh. I wrote 250. You sure it's 350?
Yep, I just went back. Undergun player begins the hand with squiggly 350.
I wrote 250. Okay, so, yeah, so if he bets 100 there, and then his other $10 bets, so, I mean, he's only got 200 left, so our raise would put him all in anyway, so it's basically a shove or call. I'm not folding.
All right, not folding. All right. You know, I think if you think back of this, hearts do not make sense, so that lends credence to the raise or fold. I mean, I don't know what the fold. The fold would be, I guess, ace-jack. I mean, there's lots of players that play ace-jack under the gun for a raise, even though they probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
And so that's not good for us, though that does give us some outs in addition to our Broadway outs. But the hearts just don't make sense to me, I don't think. I mean, because now you're talking king-queen of hearts, right?
Yeah.
It's really the only legitimate heart hand I can think. Because the ace and jack are already on the board, so now you're down to the nine after that. Ten hearts.
He could have ace-king with the king of hearts, and he's betting top pair, top kicker, Broadway, and nut flush draw.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that's that. Yeah, but that's not a made flush, so.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I really am starting to think that either we're chopping this pot. He has ace-jack, which is not good for us. But we're not drawing dead with, like, a flush. So,
right,
yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of like to call for a couple of reasons. Still disguises our hand. I mean, we haven't done much here, right? We had that one raise, but then he came right out to – I mean, bet right into us again now, so – Kind of think I'm going to go with the call here and see what he does on the river.
Okay.
Well, all right. Here says this wasn't the best turn card. Not only did the flush and Broadway straights get there, but we can add ace jack to the list of hands that now beat us. After a quick peek, we confirm the fact that we had no heart. Our opponent may have a pair with a heart in his betting that turns to semi bluff. We have a look at his neatly stacked chips and see that he's got exactly $201 remaining. A few questions. What is he putting us on? Can we call on the spot, or is this a fold or jam situation? What's the move? I don't know what he's putting us on here.
Yeah.
I would assume he has. He would assume that we have an ace. It's just a matter of how big our ace is. He doesn't seem too scared by us having that ace, right? Or he's trying to play these hearts, which is a bad bluff if he doesn't have the hearts.
I guess we have to we have to think deep and wonder what would a player who was willing to bet $10 on one street now bet 10 times that amount on the next street? What would give him that confidence or that urgency to now bet 10 times what he was willing to bet before because the Jack of Hearts came? He's willing now to put in 100 when he wasn't before. And so it feels like two pair because, and now he's protecting against the fourth heart.
Yeah, he's worried about the hearts.
Yep. And the fourth straight card. So it feels like we're behind. And I still want to call because I want to see what happens. But
it's fixed money, not ours.
Yeah, it's fixed money. But I wonder, and that if you analyze that part of the story, hey, I've got this hand and this flop hit it, and I am only willing to bet 10 and call 30 more when it's a raise. Now, a Jack of Hearts comes, which makes it even more dangerous, and I'm happy, or I'm urgent. So, something, either one of those is not good news for us.
You're right.
I don't think. You know. So, I'm going to call, but I'm going to be really careful on the river and hope we get Showdown for cheap price, unless we hit something amazing, which I don't see that can be because hearts are still out there. So, yeah, I'm going to be cautious with this call.
Well, our queen would give us our Broadway, right?
So, yeah, but the hearts, yeah. I mean, the hearts are there, so.
Yeah, but again, I've.
You don't believe that, so, okay.
I'm having trouble believing he has hearts. Now, he could surprise me here, but really, really surprised if he has hearts. I think he's protecting against hearts is what, as we just said, I don't think he has hearts, so.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, that means we're behind, but not drawing dead. I guess that's what I'm saying.
You know, right.
If it's flush out there, we'd be drawing dead, but we're not to that point yet. And even if he has king, queen, we're not drawing dead either because we can still split this pot. So, all right. Here it says, we take our time with this, but eventually decide on a call. I'm not sure what we're looking for in the river, so I guess I was interpreting his $100 bet as a bluff when the scary jack of hearts hit the turn. High position, so maybe he'll hang himself on the river. With a pot of 325, the dealer puts the queen of spades in the river, making the final board ace of hearts, 10 of clubs, 4 of hearts, jack of hearts, queen of spades. And again, without any hesitation, he slides both stacks of reds and the $1 capper into the pot. 201 for us to call.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably splitting this pot. I would think there's nothing else for us to decide here. It's either we're calling or it's over. So I don't see myself folding with a $325 pot and we have Broadway and we weren't sold on the hearts. So
we weren't sold on the hearts.
Right.
Yeah,
so we got to, you know, if he has any pittance left, just put them all in. But I don't know if he does. So we just call him.
Yeah, at this point, I think the worst case is we're chopping. Yeah. I really don't think they're hearts. I'm going to be really feeling stupid if this guy turns over 2 hearts here. But yeah, I think worst case, we're chopping this pot. And best case, he's done everything he can to get us off his hand, not realizing that we have second, not second, but second highest hand rank here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right, our hero says, we go into the tank. What hands does he have that he can open from under the gun, bet call the flop, and then leave the turn and shove the river? He could have played hands like queen of hearts, 10 of hearts, or 10 of hearts, 9 of hearts like this. But he could also play hands like ace-x with king of hearts, or king of hearts, queen of hearts, with any Broadway card like this, too. Was he getting tricky with a hand like 5 of hearts, tray of hearts, and bet 100 on the turn to protect against the fourth heart? We eventually decide on a call and are rewarded when we hear him say 2 pair.
Ace and jacks, right? Aces up.
Queen of clubs, jack of diamonds, and we drag in the $727 pot.
Wow. We had queen jack?
Much weaker than we thought. And that was a perfect river card for us then.
Holy cow.
More money on this guy at that point without him improving the 2 pair. And a ballsy move from him there, too. I mean, any king has him beat there. I mean, any king.
Oh my! Didn't it seem like it was perfectly ace and jack? I mean, like ace is up. That's what he thought it was. That's why he would have bet the 100. Why does he bet 100 on the turn with just hitting his bottom pair, and everything in the world gets there on that street? That's bizarre.
Well, yeah, I guess if I put myself in his head, what he's trying to do is represent any of those other hands. And if you think about it, I mean, with the hand we had, he had us beat with everything. You know, if he had hearts, which we didn't believe. He has his beat. He could have already had a straight, but we're still drawing ours. And he had ace jack. He had his, you know, he had 2 pair when we had single pair. So, you know, he was probably just trying to push us off the hand, and we're stubborn.
I mean, this is why we make so much money when we play 1-2 or 1-3. Because, I mean, seriously, on that river, just because you made 2 pair, I mean, think about it. You raised under the gun with queen jack off. Then you got a bunch of callers. The flop comes with a gutter for you, and you bet 10. Somebody raises you to 40, telling you they have you beat. You call. The turn gets you 1 pair and still the gutter, but it completes Broadway. It completes hearts. And it completes different sets that might have stick around for one street. And who knows? There's all kinds of hands now that beat your bottom pair, but not bottom pair on the board.
Right.
And then he comes, you know, just barrels blasting for $100 when he couldn't even muster a half the pot on the street before. And then when the queen gets there, he shoves. Now, I don't care. You're not forcing. He's got to think, oh, this guy only needs a king to beat me now. And he obviously had an ace in his hand. He could have easily had ace queen by calling your preflop raise under the gun. So two pair easily aces up could easily be in your holding the way you played it as the hero. And this guy shoves for 200. This is why people don't understand what stories are. And of course, we're trying to make this guy's story, and we failed miserably. Right? So now you know, though. Now you want a $500 pot. Well, 700 when we called. You want a $700 pot off this guy, and you know that he plays weird. And so now you can move forward with that information. And now stories really won't make sense with this guy moving forward. But wow, that's a bizarre holding. Bizarre holding. Yeah.
And I wonder, because we were talking about raising preflop, Vic got a little trickier, which I think worked out for him here. But if we raised, I wonder what would have happened.
Oh, he would have called.
Yeah, probably, but that's a tough call to make there. I mean,
preflop, the guy, you know, he was willing to call 30 more after the flop when he missed it basically completely. I think he would call, you know, 30 more preflop with whatever hand he fell in love with there, Queen Jack. I mean, and it's funny now, if you go back into time and we had said, hey, tell us if Queen Jack makes sense, you know, from the beginning, he'd be like, well, he wouldn't raise a Queen Jack under the gun. He did. Well, he wouldn't bet that flop under the gun, but he did. He wouldn't bet 100 by hitting just one, but he did. He wouldn't shove by making that with four, but he did. I mean, seriously, there's no story that makes sense with this guy.
Right.
Yep. Insane. Well, you know, Vic always wins, though, so that's the key to the hand of the week.
Well, and I would say the good thing for this player is if you've established yourself as being this way out of the norm, it makes it harder to play against them, right? If he knows how to play it that way, but he proved through the rest of the hand that he doesn't know how to play it that way.
Right, and it would behoove him to now play ABC poker, because they'll say, well, this guy doesn't play that way, and then boom, he turns over the standard ace-ace, you know, when he raises under the gun or something. But in this case, wow, that was one of the more shocking two pair hand I've ever seen. We've ever talked about on the show. Yeah, that's bizarre. See, I was positive. I was positive at the end of the show. I have time to squeeze in one more denouement. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Lowe.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.